Hello, everyone. This is Philosophy of the People with Ben Burgess and Stefan Bertram. And today, this week, we are talking about time. And specifically, one feature of kind of the debates or kind of the discussion in philosophy around time, which is the A and B theory of time, which, complicatedly, is not the same thing as eternalism versus presentism. Though even more complicatedly, these things are related to each other.
There you go. yeah. So this is, stuff I've always found really interesting, you know, that I ran into back in, you know, the early Bush years as a graduate student at the master's program at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. This guy named Quentin Smith, who taught there, who wrote a lot about this. And, you know, and I think there's something to this that, you know, if part of the attraction of philosophy is that we all sort of have this like rough intuitive picture of how things work, that often, the second you start to ask any kind of like relatively precise follow-up questions about it, often stops making a lot of sense. That, you know, it's sort of, I think, you know, maybe part of the tantalizing offer is that, hey, maybe if we think about it in the right way for long enough, it will start to make sense again. Who knows?
Right. I mean, there's a question which you do go into, I think, a bit in the article about, well, what are we even talking about here? When we talk about time, are we talking about like a vector in space-time? Or are we talking about kind of like a human construction which kind of structures the way we live?
Yeah. So I think that most of us, you know, start out assuming that the way that we experience it is the way that it is. I mean, that that's, I mean, it's like, how do you say that sentence out loud? And it just sort of,
average analytic insight.
Yeah, exactly. It's like sort of mind-numbingly obvious, right? What it is to experience something a certain way is to start out thinking that that's, you know, that's the way it is. But as you indicate, there's at least one big reason right off the bat for at least people who live in 2023 to not think that that's entirely the way that it is, because old, you know, Newtonian physics did pretty much track what we intuitively think about time, that it's this universal invariant, like, you know, that there's exists objectively, that, you know, that we're sort of going through in much the way that we seem to, etc. Like Newtonian physics didn't really create a lot of problems for our intuitive idea of what time is, but Einsteinian physics does create problems for it. So that, you know, you've, according to Einstein and, you know, everybody now, there's no such thing as absolute simultaneity, right? So Newtonian physics and in just like regular human experience, you know, we think that, yeah, I mean, obviously somebody could not know that two things were happening at the same time as each other, but like they are or they aren't. And that's that, right? That's the way that things seem to be. Whereas what you learn from Einstein is that no, actually, whether things are at rest or in motion depends on relative to what. Things could only be, you know, at rest or in motion relative to other things, and these give you reference frames, and that you actually only have simultaneity relative to reference frames. So, event A and event B are simultaneous relative to reference frame one, but not relative to reference frame two. And so you get wacky shit like The Twin Paradox. Anybody who ever watched the X-Files remember that in the first episode of the X-Files, Mulder is going over Dr. Scully's education and Chiwetel thesis, Einstein's Twin Paradox, a new interpretation. You know, we never find out what it was, but I personally want to know, you know, if Chris Carter ever wants to reveal that. But
right, because like the two twins, phenomenologically, will experience, you know, for each of them 1 second per second, and it'll feel the same to them. But when they reconvene on Earth, they'll find out that actually more time has passed for one of them.
Yes,
so we're assuming that there's kind of like an absolute present that doesn't seem to work.
Yeah, twin paradox is the one of the twins stays on Earth and one of them goes up into space. And because how where you are and how far you're, you know, fast you're traveling, all that stuff will result in being in a different reference frame. So, yeah. That's the takeaway is what you said, right? That one of them will actually not just seem older, but objectively be older than the other one when they get back. A different amount of time has passed for the two twins. Anybody watched the 2014 Matthew McConaughey movie Interstellar? This is a big plot point there. And of course, that sort of wacky science fiction stuff is speculative, but we're actually soaking in proof of concept of the basic idea that the, you know, that the phone, that if you are as developmentally disabled as I am about directions and you need your phone to direct you everywhere, that the satellites it uses to do so have to actually adjust for like my, you know, small relativistic effects. There's, you know, like the technology that surrounds us, right, you know, is part of how it works is by assuming, you know, wouldn't work if we didn't know that this were true. So then you think, okay, so we have this really well-supported physical theory, and that well-supported physical theory kind of is in some really weird tension with our intuitive idea, that intuitive picture of how time works, because some of the things that, you know, like, I think this is one of those subjects that, and honestly, there are a lot of philosophical issues that are like this, where you can just, like, you can just summarize one of the competing positions and do it in a sort of colloquial way. And everybody who's never thought about it will nod along, like, oh, yeah, that's obviously right. But, like, you could have picked a different one and summarized in a colloquial way, and everybody would nod along to that, too. Because oftentimes different positions just latch on to different things that sort of seem true if you haven't thought about it that much. And so definitely one of the things that people nod along to for time is presentism, which is the view that only the present moment exists, right? Past doesn't exist anymore, future doesn't exist yet. There's no sense in which, you know, Julius Caesar exists. There's no sense in which your great, you know, future great, great, great grandchildren exist. And that's a version of what's called the A theory of time. So the A theory of time basically says that there is such a thing as the sort of annoying schmancy term for this is an ontologically privileged present moment, which just means like something that is objectively the present moment, independent of human perception. And according, the extreme form of A theory is presentism that says, yep, there is an objective present moment and that's all that exists. And then there's a moderate form of A theory, which I remember Ted Sider calls moving spotlight eternalism. So eternalism is the view that all of time exists. And according to the B theory of time, it all exists in exactly the same way. There's no like objective metaphysical difference between the different parts of it. But according to the sort of moderate form of A theory, there's that it only it all exists, but like only one bit of it at a time has this special status objectively that it's the present moment. And so the stuff before that is objectively the past. The stuff after that is objectively the future. And yeah, I think we do all sort of, you know, intuitively it feels like time is passing, you know, that there is such a thing as the present moment, and it keeps changing. But that's a really tough fit with the Einstein stuff because, well, hold on, if there's an objective present moment, then if, what about those twins? What about, you know, like when Matthew McConaughey goes into space and he, you know, comes back and like his daughter is much older than him. I guess I just spoiled Interstellar for you. Sorry, but it wasn't 2014. You should have watched it by now. So it's like, that's a, which is the present moment, right? Like if whether two things are even happening at the same time is relative to reference frames, I mean, certainly one of those basic intuitive ideas about how time works is that if A is happening right now and B is happening at the same time as A, then A and B are happening at the same time as each other. And I'm just realizing as I'm saying this, I should pick different letters because it's confusing as we're talking about A and B periods of time. But
X and Z.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, if X is happening at the present moment and if X is happening right now and Z is happening at the same time, then, you know, simultaneously with X, then Z is in the present moment. But if there's no such thing as absolute simultaneity, if like what's happening at the same time is relative to reference frames, then it doesn't seem to get, you don't seem to be able to hold on to that idea that there's a single thing that's objectively the present moment for everybody, regardless, that, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with human perception, etc., that like feels so obvious. So that's like one half of the problem, that we seem to have this really good reason from modern physics to reject the A theory of time. But then, like, there are all these problems with the B theory of time, so that's why it's hard.
Right, and so, but A and B theory are, and I was checking back on, so A and B theory was made up by this guy, McTaggart. Yeah. And I realized reading back, and I remembered reading back in the SCP article, when he made up A and B theories of time, his idea was that they were both bad. Because he denied that time existed.
Yeah, so this is something I realized there's just way too much terminology to keep track of here. But so the A and B terminology comes from McTaggart, but he's not presenting these as like, oh, here are two theories of how time works. He's saying, hey, here are two different ways of describing time, the A series and the B series. And then, like, let's start to think about these, and my goodness, it all gets confusing. Actually, time is an illusion. That's what's called McTaggart's paradox. And you know, I think he convinced very few people that time is an illusion,
but everyone liked his terminology.
Yeah, everybody liked his terminology, and I think he did help convince people that this stuff is confusing. You need to think harder about how to sort it out. So yeah, I think so. One way into this is say, all right, so, you know, just in terms of ways of talking about time, the A series is like the thing people often say is it's like the A is clock time, B is calendar time. So, you know, like in other words, think about the difference between a calendar where you're just looking at a bunch of dates next to each other and you can see the relationships between those dates, you know, and if they're, you know, maybe you've got like appointments written down on them, you know, you can see which ones are before and after which other ones and all that stuff. But that's just this like bird's eye view that, you know, you're seeing all this stuff about them collectively. Whereas, you know, clock or a watch or a phone now is
it privileges a special moment.
Yeah, exactly. It only tells you, it's not like, oh, here are a bunch of moments that I'm presenting with you together. It just presents you with one, because the idea is that's the one that it is right now. The clock is a device for capturing the ever-shifting present moment. And this is so another way we could talk about like A sentences and B sentences, or if you're sick of the letters, right? Tensed and
yeah, tensed. They tense and tenseless.
Yeah.
Because I think that gets to the heart of it.
Yeah. So a tense sentence is, you know, at least in English and most other languages, I do vaguely understand that there are languages that don't have grammatical tense exactly, although I'm pretty sure there are still ways for speakers to indicate whether they're talking about things that are going on right now or happened in the past or will happen in the future. But yeah, sticking for the sake of simplicity with English and languages like English, sentences all have this grammatical tense. And so an A sentence is just a regular sentence that has... That
can Which is another point in its favor.
Yeah, totally, right? That like contains some kind of reference to these A properties, right? These tense properties, these transient temporal properties, which would be things like pastness, presentness.
The one on the SCP is Sullivan is eating a burrito.
Sure, why not? That's fun. It's good that they didn't, they didn't like fall into lazy, you know, stereotypes. It's not that, you know,
it's not
Sanchez is eating a burrito or that, you know, Sullivan is eating a potato. But yeah, it's, so yeah, like any regular sentence is a tense sentence, an A sentence that it can, you know, a sentence that contains an apparent reference to one of these properties like pastness or presentness or futurity. A tenseless sentence would be like a somewhat artificial sentence that you construct specifically so it doesn't include any such reference.
Like one of the ones where they try and like describe the police killing a guy without saying that the police killed a guy.
Yeah. There's the you sort of shift the you make the subject the guy himself or the death, and you know you. And you never exactly say, you know,
the gun was fired at 3:47 p.m.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess was. It's hard.
Yeah,
no,
that's not even a tenseless sentence, but yeah, it's the same energy as trying to come up with the tenseless sentence.
You can't even do it for fire. What would it be? Gun. It doesn't make any sense. If you see like gunfire at 3:45 p.m., you sound like a caveman.
Gunfire. Discharged.
The example on the SAP says Sullivan eats a burrito at insert time, but eats just seems like present tense. And I guess it's meant to be like kind of tenseless eats, but like.
Yeah,
it's a real struggle.
But yeah, I always think of the sort of that like subjunctive. What I always think of is the Stalinist tense. You know, mistakes were made. let's not go into any detail. Mistakes were made. Any ordinary real English sentence is going to include some kind of tense in it. If you do one of these artificial tenseless sentences, you have to do some like weird thing outside of ordinary English to like indicate that, you know, you're using a present tense word like is, but you're not using it to mean is right now, right? You're just using it in some kind of odd tense neutral way. So you'll see these sentences that have parentheses around the is, or presumably Sullivan eats the burrito. You know, I guess maybe there'd be the parentheses around eats to indicate that this is just a tense neutral, you know, we're referring to the event. We're not saying anything about.
Just believe that we're right.
whether it's happening now or, you know, the past or future. And, you know, I guess to be fair, right, the is already, I mean, this sounds funny to say, I mean, I'm old enough to, that my immediate reference for this is the all the jokes about Clinton. But, you know, yeah, there are different things that is can mean. There's the is of identity, Bruce Wayne is Batman. There's the is of predication, where you're like, you're attributed a subject to a predicate. So, you know, Bruce Wayne is rich. And yeah, there's the temporal is, where what you mean to indicate is as opposed to was. And yeah, the parentheses or whatever are meant to indicate that's not what we mean here. And so, yeah, I think the thing, the sort of big thing that, you know, I do try to suggest at the end of the essay some other things that A Theory has against it, but according to Christopher Hitchens' memoir, Hitch 22, Clinton was telling the truth when he said he didn't inhale. He said Clinton always preferred edibles. What do you do about Oxford? But yeah, so yeah, the big thing that's going against the A Theory of Time is that it just doesn't seem to fit with our best current physics, which is a very big thing indeed. But
B can't work in human language, which also seems quite large.
Yes, but also B creates this huge problem about regular human language, because it does seem like, you know, at least some sentences that are spoken by humans are true. I mean, that's a, you know, that's a hot take if there ever was one, right? But like, at least some things that some people
average analytic insight
exactly are true.
We should get a buzzer. Average analytic insight.
Yeah, I mean, I'm willing to die on the hill of at least some things that some humans have said are true,
including that sentence.
Including that sentence, that's one of them.
How does that work with category theory, Ben?
Let's do that another time. it could be that sentence just doesn't refer to itself, and, you know, so we're not including it. But even if it's not referring to itself, there are some sentences other than that one that I'm pretty sure are true. You know, how many fingers am I holding up?
Well, I mean, the kind of the reply doesn't matter, because indexically, like, one of them must be true, right?
Yeah.
There must be a number, even if the number is zero.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, so it does seem like at least some things that some people have said are true, and that actually creates a huge problem for the B theory of time.
Great sentence. That should be in the article.
It should have been, yeah. Well, I'm going to be sticking with this next week, so maybe I can work it in there. That because everything that anybody ever says outside of some weird, painfully constructed artificial sentence in a philosophy paper. You know, my main thought on the RFK stuff is that I'm just pissed that my Ashkenazi genes weren't strong enough to stop me from getting COVID last year. But in any case, surely at least the half Jewish, half Chinese people, you know, were all spared, you know, that the bioengineering, you know, was good enough to
yeah, you're not dead. Stop complaining. Stop cratching.
Fair enough. In any case, yeah. So if you think at least some things that some people have said outside of weird artificial sentences and philosophy papers are true, then you have this big problem, because everything that everybody ever says in the normal course of things includes some sort of apparent reference to a properties like pastness, presentness, futurity. And so classically, now not everybody, and like there are like new strategies now, but classically what tenseless theorists did, what B theorists did, was said, okay,
An older Ben.
Yeah. So what we have, so yeah, the classic strategy is from sort of Bertrand Russell onward on this, is to say, okay, it must be that, sure, these sentences are true, but that means, because what they really mean is something that doesn't involve these A properties.
Which is a great philosopher move, which is to say, actually, all these things that normal people say, and they think they know the meaning, and also like linguistics think they know the meaning of them, actually means something different.
Yeah. Awesome. I love it. So yeah.
It's the same as the people who say, you know, actually, I'm saying boo when I say, don't kill that child. It would be wrong.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, don't is okay. It's an imperative. But yeah, it would be wrong to kill that child seems like a reference to a moral property of doing so. So yeah, if you're AJA or you say, no problem, I got this. Really, what
you're doing,
yeah, that's all you're doing, is you're booing at the thought of killing the child. Yeah, so the sort of obvious one is when you say, okay, well, maybe when I say now, that just refers to whatever time it is when I say it. That actually, like, just out of context, that sounds reasonable enough, right? So so I'm referring to a point in time. And so really what it means, if I say, for example, the meeting starts now, if I say it at 3 o'clock, then what that means is that the meeting starts at 3 o'clock. All right, no problem, done. But
what if you don't know it's 3 o'clock?
Yeah, so that's the first
problem. You do know the meeting starting now.
Yeah, it is frequently the case, right, that you could know that some sentence that included now is true without having any idea what time it is. If you're just like, you know, if your phone is dead, you're nowhere near anybody who could tell you what time it is. Let's say you just woke up, your phone is dead, you're nowhere near what anybody could tell you what time it is, and you could see that the sun is setting, right? You know the sun is setting now. You know that that's true. You definitely do not know the sun is setting at 7:15 or whatever, because you have no idea what time it is. That's something that happens all the time. So that's the first problem. And if they really mean the same thing, then how is it possible that you know that one of them is true and the other one isn't? And I guess it is worth pausing at this point to say, you might not be that bothered by this, if only because this problem has lots of company. There are all sorts of problems that you can construct along the same lines where we think that two things mean the same thing, but we can come up with a scenario where somebody knows that one of them is true, not the other. So like Saul Kripke has this example about Pierre. It's the Pierre paradox. So Pierre is a Frenchman who has seen pictures of London in a book. And so he forms the belief that, you know, Londres est joli, London is pretty. And then years later, and, you know, I guess for this to be remotely plausible, we'd have to set this in the distant past. And, you know, I wonder about the book, but whatever. Years later, he learns English and he's traveling around England. He visits London. He thinks it's the ugliest place he's ever seen. He hates it. If he would absolutely reject London as pretty, but not putting together that London and Londres are the same place, right. He continues to believe Londres is joli. And so, you know, there are all these different. All these problems.
Is that a different one to the masked man fallacy?
Same kind of thing, I think.
Because the masked man is the idea that, well, Leibniz's law, which is what you do if you don't want to end up doing the fallacy, is the idea that if A and B are the same objects and A and B are indiscernible.
Sure.
Which is like, right, yeah. And an example of making the error is to say that Lewis Lane thinks Superman can fly. Lewis Lane thinks Clark Kent cannot fly. Therefore, Superman and Clark Kent are not the same person.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I think it's the same kind of idea that you believe something of, Lois, right? I mean, I'm just curious if this is a
reaction. Yeah, what did I say, Lewis?
so maybe this is a...
What did I say, Lewis?
Fine. Lois. I mean, this is the gay reimagining of the Superman story. I'm sure that exists, but in any case, it's the same kind of idea. So yeah, there are some larger problems here, and maybe think that whatever's going on with the, you know, knowing that something's happening now, but not knowing what time it is, that's the same kind of thing that you know that something is happening, you know, like, you, like, whatever your solution is to these Superman Pierre kinds of examples, maybe that's your solution there, and so you're not that bothered by this. There is a trickier problem that is about that you see, and so I'm getting all this from Quentin Smith, who I referred to earlier, his book Language and Time, and he points out, okay, hold on, so even if you can live with all the stuff about the meeting starts now, set at 3 o'clock, what about it is now 3 o'clock, said at 3 o'clock, like if, you know, you know.
Right, is it recursive?
Because...
is it semantically kind of useless? Because it seems not to be.
Yeah, exactly, right? Like you say, I mean, it seems like if you're saying, oh, no, what I really mean, what people, everybody really means when they say, oh, what time it is, they say, oh, it's 3 o'clock. What they really mean is it's 3 o'clock at 3 o'clock, where, you know, it is in parenthesis to indicate that we mean tenseless.
It's definitely not true. Like
that cannot possibly be right because that sentence has totally different properties than it is now 3 o'clock. It's now 3 o'clock is a contingent statement. In other words, something that could be true, could be false. You just have to check. And it's only true if you say it at 3 o'clock. All the other times, besides 3 o'clock, if you say it is now 3 o'clock, it's not true. Whereas it is 3 o'clock at 3 o'clock is a sentence that is necessarily true, no matter when you say it. You know, you say it is, you know, it is 3 p.m. at 3 p.m., you can say that at 4 a.m. and it's still true and still radically uninformative. Whereas if you say it is now 3 o'clock, you know, at 4 in the morning, then that's both, you know, you're conveying information that would be interesting if it were true, but it's not. So that seems like that one seems like just kind of a bad job. And then you've got, and then I think there's a somewhat more plausible strategy that also has some problems. So there's the first one is the tenseless date theory. That's what we've just been talking about, that you say, what you're really referring to is a particular moment in time. And then there's the tenseless token reflexive theory. So a token, you know, so a type is like any sentence that combines, you know, the same words in the same way, whatever. A token is a particular instance of that sentence being spoken or written down. And so the tenseless token reflexive translation strategy is where you say, okay, what I mean by the meeting starts now is that I'm not referring to a particular point in time. I'm saying that the start of the meeting is simultaneous with this utterance. And yeah, that one at least avoids the problems we've been talking about, since if you say 3 o'clock is simultaneous with this utterance at 4 o'clock, you've just said something false. You haven't turned it into a necessary truth. So,
but it has made all sentences self-referential, which if a French continental philosopher had said, it'd be all in those kind of magazines about scams and fake philosophy and so on.
Yeah. So this is, seems like this is a really weird consequence, that all sentences turn out to actually be about themselves, rather than being about the things that they seem to be about. That, you know, so like Quentin's example in Language and Time is the forest is burning now. Well, that seems to be a straightforward sentence about a forest fire. It turns out on this view that the actual, like, the sentence is a little bit about the forest fire, but it's also about the sentence itself. You know, you're saying that the forest is the burning of the forest is simultaneous with that utterance. But that's pretty wild, because, like, I mean, one, it just doesn't seem to be about that. It seems to just be about the forest, what's going on in the forest, not, you know, what somebody has said about what's going on in the forest. You know, I think another part of the intuition of this argument is, well, the forest would be burning now, even if nobody, like, noticed or said so, right? Like, if in a, you know, in a world where language had never been invented, it would still, you know, this sentence that nobody had ever spoken, right? Like, this would still be true, right? Even if nobody had pointed it out, that the forest was burning now, right? That there'd be a point where it was happening then, you know, in the, you know, point where it was in the past or whatever. There's something very counterintuitive about that. So, I mean, I think it's not like maybe a, it's also kind of funny because the late Quentin referring to was, like, the least punctual person I've ever known, and that's like me talking, but in any case, it's maybe not as much of a disaster as the date translations, but it's very fishy, right? There seems to be
something. I mean, my question is, I'm not sure if we want to be normal eternalists, not people who privilege a present moment in time, give it special ontological status, why we have to be tenseless. Presumably there is a massive flaw with this, but it seems to me that we can, you know, be tensed without granting special status to those tenses, in the same sense that we're indexical about places. This doesn't mean, as you give in the, you talk about in the article, it doesn't mean when you say I'm in LA, it doesn't mean you're granting special ontological status to LA, in the same way that when I say I'm going to this meeting now, what I'm saying there is I'm referring to now as it exists for me, and my, you know, and I can refer to also my past and also to my future without granting it special ontological status, just granting it special phenomenological status.
Or yeah. So I think that that's, so I think there are really two points there, and I definitely agree with the second one. So one of them is there's a sort of, like that there's some, there's like a sort of way of like splitting the difference, or there's like something that's like short of having this like, you know, totally mind independent objective status that it'll still be good enough for what we want for tense discourse. That might be true, but I mean, I think that's like a sort of more substantive claim. I mean, I think that needs to be worked out a little bit more. The second part though, I think is definitely right. Right. So that the second part is that sort of thinking about the analogy with space should be enough to lead us to think that something has gone wrong if we infer from these problems about language and time to this.
Right. It's like the B theory people have used, the theory which points out that space and time are actually the same, to be like, no, actually they're different.
Yeah, well, so I mean, they do think that they're the same. But I think there are a couple things going on here, right? So one is that let me just put this differently. I think this would be clearer if that we could just say so there are all these problems about how to make sense of tensed language in the absence of some sort of objective, you know, temporal properties and, you know, transient temporal properties. There's, you know, the permanent temporal properties, like before or after, everybody's fine with those. The controversial part are the transient ones, that nowness and pastness and all that stuff. So the fact that all of these, that they're, all these problems about language, about tensed language, that the inference from there to, oh, I guess there really are temporal, you know, transient temporal properties of some sort, I think that a really good reason to think that's not a good inference is basically the one that you just said, right? That part I definitely agree with. That the, and in fact, I mean, reading Language and Time back in 2004, this is the part that bugged me about it the most then, right? Because I think there's even a line somewhere where he sort of says, oh, it's, you know, might be interesting to explore the analogy about this. Like, yes, it would, to do that now.
For future researchers. Yeah,
exactly. Because nobody...
I leave this as an exercise for the reader.
Nobody thinks that... any sort of problems about language and space lead to some sort of like crazy metaphysical takeaway. Because, you know, I think that, you know, really the disanalogy, you know, like it, like the disanalogy that the A theorist sees, I mean, the B theorist thinks that, you know, they are the same, right? You know, but like the disanalogy that the A theorist sees between time and space, I think doesn't really come from anything about language. Like there are problems about language, but I think they're going to be the same problems. I think it really just comes from the fact that like our intuitive experience of time is different, right? So, but that sort of sounds less impressive if you're kind of sort of explicitly making everything just all about that. And yeah, this is actually one of the things. So I kind of, you know, the way the essay is structured, I sort of say, okay, here's kind of the case for A theory, right? Through all the stuff about language, but here are a bunch of.
Which is funny because the article's like, fuck A theory. And then most of it's like, B theory doesn't make any sense.
So yeah, the structure of it is like, here's the case for it, but then, yeah, you know, like, despite that case, right, here's why I don't buy it. And then it sort of ends on a cliffhanger where it's like, okay, wait a second, though. What about all that stuff, right? Like if I don't buy it, then there needs to be some sort of answer to all of that. And, you know, that's where we'll pick up next week. But I did, and, you know, and I think that one of the big things I want to say next week is pretty much exactly what you just said, right? That the analogy with space makes me think that whatever's going on here, right, whatever the right analysis of the problem about language is, it's not going to lead towards A theory-ish conclusions, because like nobody would embrace the parallel conclusions that like there really is an objective property of here-ness that only some parts of space have. That just seems totally wrong. Where does that leave us? Well, I think that if we do sort of remove the issue about language, which again, talk about that more next week, but if we do remove the issue about language.
Do you need to abolish language and just express the next episode purely in formal logic?
There you go, yeah. yeah, this would be like a throwaway character in a Douglas Adams novel who's like only described for a paragraph, you know, that's like that. Then he became convinced that everything everybody ever said was wrong and like took a vow of silence for the next 50 years of his life so as not to accidentally utter any falsehoods. So I think that putting aside language, which is a big thing to put aside, and we will get back to that next week, but putting aside language, I think that if we are just playing at the level of intuition, even besides this massive problem about physics, there are actually, I think, some other reasons to find A theory pretty sketchy. So one of them, and you know, I think we can sort of do one each for the two different kinds of A theory. So remember that, you know, all B theorists, right, all tenseless theorists are eternalists, people who believe that all of time exists. But only some A theorists are presentists, people who believe only the present exists, right? You could be a moving spotlight eternalist and think that like, well, you know, if we sort of imagine the timeline, you know, that like that a different bit of it is lighting up every second, you know, as that's like the objective present moment. And I think
which is like the kind of the cut the differences, yeah, kind of model. That's the radical model of time.
Matty Iglesias is a presumably a moving spotlight eternalist. Or I don't know, maybe not even Matt Iglesias is like those like the like no labels people who want like
basic bitch B theory, someone said in chat.
Fair enough. I am look. You know, I am somebody who's always willing to embrace the truth of boringly obvious things. That's the, you know, Exile, Main Street is the best Stones album. I'm not going to be contrarian and say that it's, you know, something from the Brian Jones era. You know, it's the I'm good with the I'm good with a lot of these extremely basic positions, but yeah. So, oh, and somebody asked in chat like a while ago, and I totally forgot about it, about B theory or eternalism and determinism, and those are.
I thought you were going to say about meditation, because someone else asked about that.
I actually missed the one about meditation. So,
do you meditate?
Do I meditate?
Have you meditated?
Not really, no. which, yeah, I don't know. Probably should.
I've internal mantras, but that's a different thing.
Okay. Like Franny and Zoe, it's that. Okay, just repeating stuff over and over again.
Yeah, I swear I'm not an NPC.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, the late Michael Brooks would actually do like silent meditation retreats and stuff. I have a really hard time imagining doing that. But, you know, God knows, maybe it's a good idea. Anyway, on the question about determinism, I think that those are separate questions, right? So to see that they're separate questions, I think one way of thinking about it is you can say, assume that eternalism is true, and yeah, I remember Dave Rubin got really mad about some articles that people were writing about him, and he did this like breathless video about it, where he's like on his phone walking up a hill or something, and like getting mad about it. And I remember Michael just got him back from a meditation retreat, and his say it was like, you know, is in such a sort of relaxed, blissed out state. It was really, really weird to watch that video. So it's like, you know, try to get into this. Like, oh yeah, all right, let's do it. Dave Rubin, what's he doing? But yeah, so you can imagine two possible worlds that are both eternalist worlds, right? So in both of them, the past, present, and future all exist. There's, you know, anything you say about the future is either true when you say it or false when you say it, because there's already, you know, it already has something to correspond to that's going to happen. But you can imagine two of these worlds and have them be identical right up until the present and then diverge in the future. So in world A, it's already true now, just to pick the classic example from Aristotle. World X, it's already true now that there will be a sea battle tomorrow, right? And in world B, which has an identical past and present, it's already true now that there will not be a sea battle tomorrow. And if that's possible, determinism is false. So even though, remember, these are, you know, these are eternalist worlds. So yeah, you can, I mean, look, it just happens that determinism is like probably true, or if it's not true because of like a little quantum randomness around the edges or whatever, it's close enough to be true that you don't need to worry about it. But in no comment on that. So yeah, I mean, I think there are other good reasons to think that determinism is true, but I don't think it really has anything to do with eternalism per se. In fact, you could also have like determinism without eternalism, that there's sort of like, you know, maybe a fact about what will happen is like built into the present, but then, you know, but like the future in which it happens.
Right. You can have a presentist universe where if you rewind it, it plays back.
Okay. So yeah, I guess just to kind of wrap up, like, again, putting aside this thing that's not a small thing to put aside, which is this problem about whether anything that anybody's ever said has been true. But putting that aside, and also for the sake of fairness, putting aside the biggest problem with A theory, which is like the physical theory that we have tons of evidence for, conflicts with it. Putting both of those aside, I actually think that A theory sort of gets less plausible the harder you think about it. And my case for that is just like, look, let's do one at a time. Moderate, you know, presentism, and then the more moderate version of A theory, that moving spotlight eternalism. Like, assume presentism is true. Say, okay, only the present moment exists. Okay. Obvious follow-up question. What's a moment? Right? Tell me about moments. How long are moments? Right? I know how we use the word moment in a colloquial, you know, everyday way. But, like, you know, if you're making an assertion about objective reality, right? Like, I think, oh, you know what I mean, isn't going to cut it. Tell me what a moment is. Like, is it half a second? You know, is
right. And you make kind of the point in the article about, like, you know, it takes time for like the sound of the desk being hit to reach my ear and the light to bounce off the wall and so on. But also about brains, it's not just there's kind of that kind of delay, but also there's like an additional delay your brain puts as it kind of processes everything. So we're always more than that. What we're seeing is still a bit more behind because it takes a little bit of time for our brain to put everything together.
For all of these reasons, right, it takes time for, you know, teensy tiny amount of time, fraction of a second, but time nonetheless. It's not instantaneous for, sound waves to hit our ears, waves of light to hit our eyes, the stuff that goes on in your brain takes time, right? So by the time you perceive anything, it is very slightly in the past. And so much the same way that it would be a really weird consequence to embrace that nothing anybody's ever said is true. It would be a really weird consequence to embrace to say that that we never have an accurate perception, right? We never make contact with external reality, right, with our perceptions. There's never a case where, you know, we perceive things as they really are, because according to presentism, only the present moment exists, and seems like the only non-arbitrary answer, the only answer that's not just hopelessly, obviously jerry-rigged to try to like map onto human experience, that you could do for what's the present moment is the present instant. And if that's what you mean, and you think only the present instant exists, then, you know, by the time you perceive anything, it no more exists, or that version of it no more exists than, you know, than unicorns exist, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like me and you are having a very present conversation that we're existing in the same moment of time. But at the very least, accepting the fact that kind of telecommunications are very imperfect and don't travel anywhere near the speed of light, it still takes light 0.03 seconds to get between Swansea and LA.
Yeah. That's ended up having this very strange argument over the weekend about anarcho-primitivism. You know, why I think that the destruction of all human civilization would be a bad thing. So I was just thinking about that sentence you said about the speed of telecommunications. And it's like, it's an accomplishment. All right. Good job. So that's the problem about presentism. And then like problem about moving spotlight eternalism is exactly. Right. Because it's like the intuition is about this thing that's like, you know, the sort of moment we experience. But of course, that's just this like fact about how the human brain and, you know, various sensory receptors and all that stuff work. Surely that has nothing to do with the structure of reality. And then, yeah, and then I think, like, moving satellite eternalism is sort of get stranger the more you think about it. Because, you know, once you say, okay, well, it all fine, it all exists, right? Then this problem about the present moment gets stranger in a different way. Because, okay, so Julius Caesar exists. You know, my great, great, great grandchild exists. But I exist now. I think that I'm having this conversation with you in the present, but hold on. If all of time exists and almost none of it has the subjective feature of being the present, then why am I right? I mean, it seems like the odds are really stacked against me. That this is like this in particular.
Right, it just doesn't really seem to solve the problem of kind of, well, why this
moment. Yeah, it doesn't seem like, you know, I mean, and really like to sort of, to sharpen it, I mean, I have this sort of goofy example that's very intuitive to me in the article that's, I suppose, you know, depending on how you feel about time travel, you know, you might not like it, but it's like you imagine two time travelers.
Yeah, if someone merely traveled through hundreds of centuries of time.
Yeah, you imagine two time travelers. One of them is from 2323 and one of them is from 2623. And they're meeting for a drink in 2023. And they both agree that 2023 is the past, but they just can't, you know, but like they disagree about, you know, which is the present in the one from 2323.
And I mean, obviously, the bar is right.
That's how bar arguments work. Yeah, there just seems like a sort of basic mistake here, like one that's very much like the hereness mistake. And I guess to like really sharpen the point, if you say, well, it's that. Okay, I guess at any given time, again, this is very confusing to even try to like say this, but you know, there's, you know, most of these people who exist throughout time who are having these sort of intuitive experiences of, you know, they're doing things in the present, almost all of them are wrong, then man, we're really not putting much of a stock in those intuitive experiences. But if we're not putting stock in those intuitive experiences, why the fuck would we be atheists? I mean, that's the whole thing, is like sort of running with our intuitive understanding of how time works. And so, and look, I'm totally open to saying that, like, you know, hell with your intuitions, you know, they're, you know, you're just wrong, whatever. But like that's that's going to cut both ways. And it's going to cut much harder against the view.
Do you want to hear my stupider solutions to this problem? My stupider, but more radical view, which I would call radical separatism, which is the idea that the idea of kind of phenomenological time, like time as a human construct, say call that time one, and then there's kind of time as a vector in space time, call that time two. It's just to say that time one and time two are different things. and thus any worries about kind of making sense of statements about time one are irrelevant to
talking
about
time two. This is just the why not both.
Which seems, once you think about it, it was like, well, no, clearly there is, at least maybe they're quite different, but there's definitely
relationship. Yeah, it'd be a really weird coincidence if there were these two radically different kinds of time that both existed and had all this.
But probably less weird than all sentences being wrong.
So, yeah, all sentences being wrong would be a really bad consequence. So next week, we're going to see if we can avoid that.
Okay, bye, everyone. We'll have to wait awkwardly as I find the exit book. I didn't anticipate Ben doing that. Allez, oui.